The following is a presentation of the Matt Talk Podcast Network.
Welcome to On the Mat. I am Kyle Klingman of the National Wrestling Hall of Fame Dan Gable Museum, joined by Andy Bubba Gump Shrimp Hamilton of TrackWrestling.com. Welcome, Andy.
How's it going, Kyle?
Doing great. I'm disappointed in you, though. I'm not rarely disappointed, but this is extreme disappointment.
Wow.
Why didn't you fill me in on the Henry VIII joke?
I can't believe you missed it. I'm disappointed in you for missing it.
I don't know how I did, but now that I've found out, I am kind of shaken to the core of the similarities between Jason Bryant, who, if you're listening to this, you probably know that Jason Bryant is the owner operator of MattTalkOnline.com, and we have found his true doppelganger, and it's King Henry VIII. If you look at it and you see it, I have a strange fascination with Jason Bryant's nose anyway, because it's perfectly formed. His nose is identical to King Henry VIII. The goatee is identical. When you first showed me the picture, I said, you superimposed that into the picture. And you said, no, I didn't. And then we Googled it, and it was the actual picture of King Henry VIII. It is uncanny. I'll let you take it from there. How you found it, it's a compelling story that we need to hash out here at the beginning of the show.
I can't even remember. Like, maybe one of the officials saw over at the Junior Worlds in Slovakia. I think one of them saw something in a store, did a double take, and then so Jason mentioned it to me, and then I looked, I'm like, holy smokes. Like, for someone that lived 800 years ago to look just like JB, it's staggering, isn't it?
I'm looking at it right now, and I still, the one that I have pulled up, I still am having a hard time believing that someone didn't superimpose Jason into that picture. It's that one,
yeah.
The original one that you showed me. I think we owe it to people who listen to have something on our social media to do the side-by-side comparison. I think you did it. You showed me a side-by-side, or someone did it.
Dennis Lemire, our TrackCast manager, did a side-by-side.
Okay.
But yeah, it's staggering how similar JB and King Henry VIII are.
Do you think it will get to his head? Do you think Jason now thinks he's royalty?
I would hope that JB uses this as an opportunity. I thought he should have dressed up as him for Halloween, but he had already had plans.
Yeah.
I was a little disappointed, but you know, this kind of just got recycled a little bit on social media here this week. And I'm floored that it fell through the cracks and you missed it the first go around.
I know. And that's why I had to bring
it up. Disappointed that you missed it the first time.
See, it's good that you're disappointed in me because I'm reciprocating it to you. So we're both disappointed in each other to start out the show, and that's fine.
But that's a good way to start the show, right?
The disappointment is gone because I've now seen the picture and the side-by-side comparison. So do yourself a favor, find a picture of Jason Bryant, and then Google King Henry VIII. It's easy to do because he's a king. Go find it. Go see the comparison. You'll see what we mean. Let's dig into the mailbag. It's very light again today, but it's not really a question that we got via social media or from email. The question comes from someone who ran into me at a coffee shop, doesn't know anything about wrestling. He's a basketball guy. He's from Italy. And he asked me, why does college wrestling have a different set of rules than international wrestling? He knew about freestyle and Greco. He knew what that meant, but to be able to be in that moment and try to explain what the differences are, I had a hard time with it. I stumbled over it a little bit because I'm so indoctrinated with the current system that it's hard for me to articulate a very good answer. I failed on that. Why is the reason we have that? And I think a lot of people are asking that, especially you. I think you think we should go to more of a freestyle brand of collegiate wrestling.
I feel like it's more entertaining. Freestyle wrestling's far more entertaining. Just don't see these lulls of inactivity in freestyle. I would say if you watch 3 weekends of high-level freestyle tournaments and you watch 3 weekends of high-level folkstyle tournaments, I don't know. I just think a lot of people would probably side with the freestyle as being the more entertaining style of wrestling.
It's more entertaining. My question,
faster paced.
Way faster. And that would be my question is, it's possible that if you have it the same system, that there could be dual meets over in 15 minutes.
Could be. I guess there could be in folk style too.
There could be. It's not typical. You'll see it
right.
Usually go 45 minutes to an hour, but I can guarantee you a low level team against Penn State is going to get throttled. They're going to get tech falls in less than a minute. They're going to just roll them up. And so I could just see that transpiring. The scoring system, what would that look like? I just would like to imagine right now as we talk about that, what would it look like if we absolutely transitioned to freestyle? What would our collegiate system look like? What would the fans that know nothing about freestyle do? Would they be on board? How would they adapt? I just think it's a really compelling question because it's something that's got brought up quite a bit. And what would that product look like? How would we make that transition? And would we be more successful in international wrestling if we did do that?
Really interesting topic because of the fact that I feel like folk style in some ways gives the United States an edge internationally. From a conditioning standpoint, a toughness standpoint, you look at David Taylor's run through the World Championships last year. David Taylor wins a lot of folk style positions where other guys are like fish out of water. I've seen him do that all throughout 2018. So I think the United States would lose a little something, but maybe there would be a gain on the other end of things just from the standpoint that more familiarity in some of those positions, chest locks, head pinches, things of that nature. I don't know. I mean, it's a really fascinating discussion because we're in interesting times for college wrestling. Attendance is higher than ever before in a lot of places. The NCAA championships are a really tough ticket. And yet, it kind of feels like in a lot of ways, we've got some things that are just really goofy with the rules. And there are some things that are kind of broken with the system. And the edge of the mat stuff, to me, it feels like officials have forgotten to call stalling in the center of the mat because of how much they call it on the edge or how much the edge of the mat rule forces them to make decisions. Yeah, there's just a lot of positions where we've tinkered with the rules a little bit and, you know, inadvertently disrupted other parts of wrestling because of it. So I don't know. What's your take?
Well, I'm with you. Like when you lay it out that way, I had more fun watching freestyle wrestling, especially this year and in the last couple of years because of the rule changes, because they have it almost right, almost perfect.
What's wrong? What would you change?
I would just, I still want to explore that final takedown where it's a deadlock and there's an automatic winner. I'm 50% there. And I think we've talked about this. I'm not against it like I used to be, but I just want to continue to think about what the ramifications would be. And then the other thing I've talked about too, is I just think the 10-0 tech fall is just a little bit light. I think with 2-point takedowns, I think we just need a little bit more. Hey, you've got scoring going, maybe extend that to 15, but those are very, very minor. Other than that, it's a really quality product. And if you don't change it, so what? I'm completely satisfied with the rules. It's so good. Now, if you would have said folk style 2015 when it was the ball grab or 2013 when it was the ball grab versus collegiate, I would have just said, I never really want to go to another wrestling meet the rest of my life. It was that bad. It was horrific rules. A ball grab to decide a wrestling match.
It's bingo, have to be, right? You might as well play bingo.
And then you choose the leg and then guys are mad. I mean, we don't
Why
see
did that,
that
seem
much.
Like a good idea for 8 years?
Oh, it was. And not only that.
How did that last for 8 years? How did it last beyond like a month?
It was it was the leg clinch, and then it was body clinch for freestyle. They tinkered around with that. This is a sport.
Rock, paper, scissors would have been more entertaining than the ball draw, right?
It was horrible. I mean, like,
just a game of rock, paper, scissors.
We've discussed this, and we're so glad we're out of that era, but you have to go back to that to bring up the point that we've gotten so good with a great product with international wrestling. We had a blast in Budapest, and that product was so fun. Even if you don't know who the competitors are and you just come in naive to who they are, you're going to probably see some entertaining wrestling. So it's quality. It's good. What would it be to make it college? Do we just do a hybrid style? We talk about this push out or this step out all the time. Is that one of the solutions, along with a couple other tweaks, just to make it a little bit better and then have a hybrid so it's more like international style wrestling? I don't know that I necessarily want collegiate wrestling to go completely freestyle. That's my own, like, you hear it and it sounds kind of cool, but there's still that little fire in my belly that says it just doesn't sound right. We have to keep some sort of integrity with our collegiate style because there are elements that I do like.
What would it look like? What would Klingman ruled wrestling universe look like?
3-point takedown, 1-point step out or push out.
Okay.
However you want to stay it. And it's a pure push out. I think that I like the idea of a guy that is long and lanky, like a Jody Strepmatter. I want him to be able to have success because in international style, he's not going to have the skill set to be able to do that. He did pretty good, but I want him to have that opportunity because the current system does allow for that. Because you can get on top, you can do some things that are unique that freestyle doesn't allow to happen. So I think it's just a few tweaks and just make things pretty standard and clear. I think that we have so much ambiguity on what the calls are and stalling. Let's just take that out. I think a shot clock is something to explore as well. And then just what we continue to talk about, when you have incentives within the scoring system that says it's better to score more points than score less points, I think that certainly adds to the overall product. I don't think it takes much at this point.
It's interesting how the two sports have gone in different directions.
Yeah.
How on the international stage, things were, as you mentioned and we just talked about, things were really bad for 8 years there. You know, one of my favorite shows that we've done, Kyle, was the one with Stan Dezik, UWW vice president, where we brought him and talked to him about what led to wrestling getting put on the chopping block and where they went after that. And sometimes the most desperate times lead to the greatest change. And we're seeing that. We've seen that with international wrestling. We're in a great spot now that we would not be in as a sport had it not been for the IOC putting wrestling on the Olympic chopping block. And so I feel like here about 4 or 5 years ago, we were in a position with college wrestling where everybody watching it, if you were a really passionate wrestling fan, you were probably disappointed with the product that you were seeing in college wrestling 4 or 5 years ago, where you're seeing so many scoreless first periods, so many 3-2 matches, guys hanging on the leg on top and just stall tactics on top and not a whole lot of activity, not a lot of great action in college wrestling 4 or 5 years ago. And so the rules committee is, I feel like they've made rules to increase action and have done so. And maybe inadvertently have also made some things really complicated in the process. And Mark Branch, chair of the rules committee, talking to him down South Beach Duels. And he talked about a situation where they put in that rule for the count for side headlock. And he was sitting in the corner and watching a scenario play out where a guy taking a guy over with a side headlock and the referee is counting. And he thought, all right, we're getting near fall points here. And turns out he was counting the stall call for the side headlock. And so as you're a fan sitting in the stands, you don't know, like, what's the count for? If a coach in the corner doesn't, who's on the rules committee, didn't know what the count's for, how's a casual fan supposed to understand? And I think we've just kind of gummed things up a little bit and maybe inadvertently in trying to make things black and white for officials and encourage them to enforce action, we've also made things really complicated in some situations.
And that's the good thing about international wrestling. Although there are times where calls can be a little bit funny from the vantage point of, was that someone else's throw or the intent? It's pretty simple that if you expose your back, you're going to give up points. That's pretty simple to translate to the casual fan, hopefully. And I think even if you don't know much about it, you can kind of just tell the natural flow and the narrative of a wrestling match. And it just looks kind of cool when someone's rolling someone up across the mat and you get to see them leg lace them or gut wrench them. It's pretty cool to watch, even if you don't know much about why that's happening and the rules. I think it plays well for that casual fan.
Well, the million-dollar question to me is, if we adopted freestyle wrestling at the scholastic level and college level, would we lose the momentum that we've gained on a fan standpoint, attendance standpoint? Would we totally lose that? Because people don't follow international wrestling styles like they do folk style wrestling. You know, the attendance, we've talked about this at length in past shows. People don't show up for world team trials, Olympic trials, U.S. Open, like they do for the NCAA championships, like they do for state tournaments in certain areas of the country. You know, would we lose that group of fans, or by introducing them to a more fast paced, more entertaining style, would we capture a whole new audience? Would we have higher attendance across the board? I don't know.
I think it just takes a few tweaks with what we have. I don't think we need to just completely scrap it.
I think that's if ever there was a changeover, like little by little, I think would be the best move.
Yeah. Don't make a sweeping change because wrestling can't handle that at this point. Hey, I'm sure you saw this. In fact, I know you did. Michigan beat Ohio State 19-17, according to the rules of today. But if the NCAA was smart and used our system, Ohio State would have won 87-66. They would have had a blowout. What do you think of that score? That's exactly what we've been trying to talk about. They had a PDI score of 87-66 that came on the backs of Joey McKenna getting a tech fall over Kanan Storr, Micah Jordan getting a 17-4 major decision, and then on down the line, Colin Moore won 12-5, Miles Martin won 24-9. They only won four matches, but would have ran away with it in cumulative scoring. When you get that initial data and you think about that, that's what we want, isn't it?
So you think that we got a lot of Ohio State fans on our side now?
Well, we do. Probably not as much Michigan. I don't think Cliff Keen's real happy fans right now. But I think this is exactly what we wanted to do. You have a couple guys, actually four guys, that blew them out of the water, had dominating matches, and the other ones, with exception of 133, where Micic won 14-1 over Pletcher, which I didn't see coming. Other than that, the rest of the matches were close. I say give it to the guys who are putting up major points on the scoreboard.
Do you think this is exactly what we wanted to do?
I do, at least from my vantage point. That's what I want to see happen. That was my vision for talking about this. And it sounds like you have some reservations at this point.
No, I'm on board with it. I'm just looking that was a pretty entertaining duel the other night. And down the wire, final match of the duel, Mason Paris, Chase Singletary. There's a lot of entertainment there because the duel was on the line, but 87-66.
Yeah. Blowout.
Yeah.
Blowout.
Because Michigan got a 3-2 win from Pantaleo at 157. Massa won 7-2 at 165. Miles Amin won 3-2 at 174. There's half of Michigan's wins right there.
Yeah.
On the flip side, McKenna, 18-3. Jordan, 17-4. Miles Martin, 24-9. Colin Moore, 12-5. Interesting stuff.
Yeah, I mean, this is the one where if someone wanted to come back at us, this is probably a dual meet score that you can point to. And just looking at you, I see you maybe 80% now with PDI rather than the 100%.
No, I'm 100%. I'm okay. On board. I'm 100% on board with this because I think you're going to have some instances like this. But I think by and large, it's just from a simplicity standpoint and promoting action, it's a no-brainer to me.
And especially when you get down into the deeper weights where Miles Martin and Colin Moore put it away pretty hard, I just think it really does add incentive for those guys to make sure they're staying competitive and trying to score as much as possible. As we talk about rule change, this is what I mean. I think this incentivizes scoring so much that I think it just really is a game changer without a significant rule change. I think that's really what it does, along with some other things, whether it's just hyping up matches or changing the order and putting the best matches last, those little things that any college program could do. And any major boxing or mixed martial arts promotion knows that you do. You don't put your best match first, but college wrestling is still a little bit behind on that, and hopefully they can catch up at some point. You'll see that occasionally. Well, they'll do a draw and agree to starting match that gets you all the way around to the best match of the night. But for the most part, it seems like people are dead set to start at 125 and end at heavyweight. But we'll see if we can make that change. We have Keith Gavin on our program for this podcast. Keith Gavin is the head wrestling coach at Pittsburgh. He was an NCAA champion for Pittsburgh in 2008. He made a world team in 2013. So we will be getting to him in a little bit. We'll definitely be asking him about the NCAA championships in Pittsburgh this year and the ticket shortage and what information he can give us. Also, just want to bring this up. Here at the 2018 World Championships, we've talked quite a bit about how we are in really the best era for wrestling right now. Collegiately, maybe, but internationally, for sure, we've had such a great run. I think we really need to put in perspective how special it was to have consecutive weights of Dake, Taylor, and Jaden Cox winning championships. They combined for 9 NCAA championships. I think of their 4 opportunities to be at the NCAA tournament, 11 of 12 appearances in the NCAA finals, and they were all world champions. They all wrestled in the 2016 Olympic trials in the same weight class, and then 2 years later, they spread out and they're all world champions. I don't know that there has ever been anything like that. And so now that we're in the moment, it just seems normal. But when you compare it to other eras within our country's history, I think we need to just step back and say, wow, that is an impressive feat to have those 3 guys spread out like that. All 3 won world championships in 2018. All 3 were in the same weight class in 2016. That is impressive.
It's incredible. Incredible. And you said 11 out of 12 for NCAA finals appearances. Jaden lost to Kyle Snyder.
Yeah. I mean,
that was the one in the semifinals. That was the one instance where one of those guys got tripped up short of the finals.
Yeah. He got 5th that year. And outside of that, you could have had 12 for 12 in the finals. But, man, that's a great run there for 3 guys. And, man, it just took Dake and Taylor being behind some tough guys in a tough weight class to finally get there. But they were world champions. So to beat out David Taylor and Kyle Dake, you had to beat a world champion just to make an Olympic or world team. It just shows you what it's like, especially in that weight classes, and why it's really tragic that we do not have more weight classes at the Olympic level, that we have to shrink that down to 6 is not fun to see.
Yeah.
This is about opportunity. We get the opportunity at the Worlds, and then you'll get the 4 non-Olympic world championship weight classes, which is still a legitimate world champion, but boy, I wish we could at least bump that up incrementally, maybe get up to 7 or 8, and then hopefully get back to the 10. But it's too bad.
Isn't it incredible that the United States wins the world title in 2017, brings back the same team for the most part, adds Joe Colon, who won a bronze, 61 kilos, at a weight where the U.S. didn't medal the previous year, adds David Taylor, Kyle Dake, both those guys win world titles. Jaden Cox wins a world title. And yet, in the end, Russia locked that thing up early.
Sure did. Yeah.
The United States had one heck of a performance in Budapest.
Yeah, you shake your head at the... I mean, I'm shaking my head because that was just an outstanding performance across the board with medals and the high level they competed.
Yeah, what was it like? Russia went. Was there a day like where they went 13-0 or something like that?
I think so. Wasn't it the
like the second to last day?
I think you're right. I think it was the second to last day of the international competition, and there was a great day for the United States that we spoke about a few months ago about. They had this magical day where you really felt like the United States could do this, where I think we had Cox and Dake win on the same day, and they just had a great run. But the United States still got second. Hopefully that translates into next year. And it sounds like the world team process, at one point they were thinking about shrinking down the Final X product and having it just Olympic weight classes only. They're not going to do that. So likely it's going to mean that the weight classes that have taken place, that Kyle Dake will not have to make a decision in 2019 on where he's going to go. Jaden Cox will not have to make that decision. But as we've made our predictions, I have said I think Kyle Dake is going to go down to 163 pounds, aka 74 kilos. And I think Jaden Cox is moving up to challenge Kyle Snyder.
That would be my guess as well.
Think so?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, here it is. Russia's second last day of men's freestyle. Russia went 11-0 and locked up the team title. Crazy.
Man, they really did. They were on a mission to win that. And kudos to the U.S. women at the Euregan.
Yeah.
Man, we gotta mention that.
Yeah,
man.
Absolutely.
They really did a nice job. Sarah Hildebrandt won a gold medal. Vicky Vortex, a.k.a. Victoria Anthony. If you follow her on social media, you know she's Vicky Vortex. Got a bronze. I think we had one other medal.
Tamara Mensah Stock.
Your roommate. Third.
Yeah, not my roommate. My next door neighbor.
Yeah.
You called her my roommate.
Yeah,
on
I did. And so the
Facebook Live.
On. Yeah.
My next door neighbor across the hall in Budapest.
Yeah.
Tamara Mensah Stock. Three-time Euregan champion now. First American to win three Euregan titles.
Nice run for the women. Congratulations to them.
Yeah. And we pointed this out over in Budapest, like how close. They weren't really all that far off from beating Japan this year.
Yeah, just a couple bad breaks.
Yeah. Really. If Helen Maroulis of 2018 is Helen Maroulis of 2015, 16, 17, she doesn't have those concussion issues and limited training we see the Helen we're accustomed to, and then maybe one or two close matches go the other way, United States is right there with Japan.
And Allie Reagan doing what she did. She made the finals twice.
Right, so right. That was the other one, too.
You had to figure she would get in there. Congratulations to the women at the Reagan. What do you say we go out to Pittsburgh? Our guest today, Keith Gavin, is the head wrestling coach at Pittsburgh. He was an NCAA champion for Pittsburgh in 2008 and made a world team in 2013. How are you, Keith?
Good. How are you guys?
We're good, and I'm going to just offload a question that I'm getting all the time. I'm a popular guy right now because everyone wants to know, how do I get NCAA tournament tickets? I'm sure with Pittsburgh hosting the tournament this year, you get that question. What is your answer?
Your guess is as good as mine right now. they're tough to come by right now, and I think a lot of schools did not get what they expected to get. So yeah, I don't know. I don't have a good answer for that. It's tough to come by.
How many does your program get?
Well, because we were hosting it, we got a little more than what we usually get, but we asked for a lot, and they only gave us 400. So
Do you have alumni contacting you? Do you have other programs contacting you? Are you getting bombarded with the question just like we are?
Yeah. No, so our ticket office takes all the ticket requests, and that's been going on since the beginning of the year. And, you know, they've been having to turn some people away because we had obviously with it being in Pittsburgh, we've had more requests than ever. So, alumni, donors, things like that, that's who we've been taking care of.
What's the problem? Is it just seating? I mean, we've had big venues before. Did they misallocate where seats are?
I don't know. You know, it's like a lot of people are asking me this stuff, and I feel like, people think because I coach at Pitt and the tournament's in Pittsburgh, I'm the event coordinator, but I really don't have anything to do with it, It's been no different for us this year than any other year. So I don't really know. You know, I guess that from what I understand, PPG paints the arena for hockey, seats about 20,000, but, you know, they have to use the arena football setting for a wrestling tournament. So now that lowers the seats to about 16,000. But I don't know. You know, I don't really know what the problem is. I just know they got a lot of requests, probably more than ever, and I don't know if they were prepared for that.
Is that a plus for you to have the NCAA championships in your backyard? Does that do anything for your program?
You know, it's a wrestling area. You know, Western PA and Pittsburgh, the people are into wrestling here. So it's exciting. You know, people are excited. The kids on our team are very excited about the opportunity to wrestle here, because not only do they go to school at Pitt, but a lot of our team is from Western PA. So so for them, it's like, you know, getting to the tournament, it'll be a pretty fun experience for them. But other than that, you know, the goal is the same. You're just trying to get better and be your best those 3 days in March.
What's it like recruiting against Penn State?
You know, it's we haven't experienced it that much, because there's just, you know, Penn State is ahead of everybody right now. So, you know, we recruit against a lot of other schools. Penn State kind of, you know, they get their pick of the litter, it seems like, right now, and rightfully so. I mean, they've done well for a long time. So, yeah, we haven't really run up against that yet.
As far as recruiting goes, that was the big thing with Penn State, is to box it in and keep everyone in state. Is there enough talent in the state of Pennsylvania to go around for all of the programs that you guys have?
Yeah, I think so. You know, I think that it's our goal in recruiting to keep a lot of these local kids home. And, you know, with Penn State, I think that they did a nice job when Cale first got there of doing that, you know, and that was kind of their foundation. And now, like I said, now they're getting kids from all over the place, you know, and that's usually the way it goes. It's like, for, you know, you can't be getting kids from all over when you haven't locked down your area yet, you know? So, you know, we're pretty new staff here, so we've been focused heavily on recruiting our area and recruiting it well and building this program that way. And then hopefully, you know, we get to the state that Penn State's at, and, you know, we're getting guys from all over the place too.
Keith, you certainly weren't a highly recruited guy. I mean, you weren't a state champ, and yet you go on, you win a national title at Pittsburgh mm-hmm. there. How often do you see guys that you know, maybe you see a little bit of yourself in them, or how often do you relay your story to a guy that might not be, you know, all world coming out of high school?
Yeah. You know, I think, I think it was a benefit to me when I got to Pitt a lot, because you see a lot of kids that had a lot of success in high school, and then they get to college and they struggle with expectations, I guess, you know, where for me, it wasn't like there wasn't a whole lot of expectations placed on me right away. So that made things a little bit easier. You know, I didn't have to deal with some of that stuff until I was older and maybe a little more prepared for it, you know, and I think that's what's tough when kids come into the program and they're still pretty immature and they have all these expectations, and because you have to have a mature mindset to deal with that stuff. And so I try to help them with that. I feel like I can relate to every guy on the team because I've been in every situation, you know, whether I was, when I first got here, I was trying to make the lineup, and you know, by the end of my time here, I was trying to win the Nationals and win a Hodge Trophy and do all that, you know? So, yeah, I feel like I can relate to every guy on the team and what stage that they're at. But yeah. And you know what I mean? My story, you know, people tell that story a lot, and I think it gets fabricated a little bit. You know, I was third in the state, but I lost to some good guys in the PA state. It just kind of goes and shows our depth. You know, Pitt had Tyler Wilps in the national finals, and I think it was 2014 or 2015. And, you know, I think he was fifth in the state as that was his best finish. You know, the year that I won nationals in 2008, Phil Davis won for Penn State, and he never won the state title either. My point being is that, you know, in Pennsylvania, that probably happens more often than other states.
Is there a barrier to break through with that though? Like mentally?
You know, I don't know. I mean, there's a mental barrier, you know, when you're going to the next level. And I don't know if that's any different than, because the thing was, like, I was going to Fargo in the summer, and I got second in Fargo, you know, so I was beating guys that were now in college in my weight. You know, I wrestled Steve Luke in the national finals, and we wrestled them in Fargo too, you know, so it was like, I already competed against those guys, you know, that were the best. And just because I didn't have a state title to my name, that really didn't do anything to me mentally. You know, I think the mental barrier really was, just kind of growing up a little bit, you know, knowing that, like, I need to raise my standard a little bit, raise my expectations. I had this idea that, you know, collegiate wrestling was going to be so much more difficult than high school wrestling. And it is, but once you get here, you get used to it pretty quick. And, I think I could have started winning maybe a little sooner than I did if I was just a little more mature.
What goes into getting to that point? You hit your stride in your junior year. You play second at the national tournament. Mm-hmm. If you had to do it over again and you had to wrestle those freshman, sophomore seasons, what would you do different?
I mean, if it was my choice, I probably would have redshirted my freshman year. So the way my career worked out was my freshman year, I got thrown in the lineup. We had a guy that was injured. So I kind of burned that year. Sophomore year, I wrestled. I had some weight. I was trying to go 157 and couldn't do that. Ended up at the end of the year, I bumped all the way up to 184, and I probably weighed about, you know, 175. But just that's the team needed me there. So that year was kind of a wash too. And then my third year, I redshirted it, and I started just wrestling the right weight class at 174. And I did pretty well. I got fourth at Midlands and, you know, beat some All-Americans there. So part of it was that, you know, like, I needed to physically mature too. You know, I was a pretty, kind of a late bloomer physically coming out of high school. So, a redshirt year in the beginning probably would have helped, but, and then also just wrestling my right weight class would have helped a lot too. But I was very fortunate that I just had good people around me, you know, good people that cared about me and, you know, some good teammates and, things like that. So I had a lot of people put time into me and that really helped, my development, you know, and I just fell in love with the process of it all, you know, of like trying to figure it out. And, you know, it wasn't so much about rewards and recognition as much as it was about just, seeing how far I can take this thing, you know? And so that was, again, that was like a maturity thing. And once I really grew into that kind of philosophy, then I was just, you know, I start to get a lot better.
Take that process from your junior year, you get pinned by Ben Askren during the season, and then you're mm-hmm. in the finals against him. How do you go against a guy knowing, hey, this guy pinned me before, but I want to make this competitive, which you did. I think he opened it up mm-hmm. late, but how do you kind of process that mentally when you get on the race stage?
Just kind of, you know, I looked at our previous two matches and what was happening, and I was getting hit with the same thing. Like, I was trying to come up in the stand up and he was getting me with this cradle that he was good at. But in both previous matches, I felt like that I could beat him on my feet, you know? So going into the finals, like, we wrestled a duel in Missouri and I got the first takedown, you know, he got out and I think I went for on the leg and somehow he reversed me and got me in that cradle again. But so it was avoid the cradle, you know, and I try to wrestle as much of the match on my feet as I can. And that's what I was able to do. But obviously it didn't work out. In the third period, I gave up a takedown, which wasn't part of the plan. You know, I needed two takedowns if I wasn't going to go underneath. So, and I only got one, but that was the plan there. I just kind of looking at it, objectively of what happened in the last two matches. And if I'm going to win this match, I had to win it on my feet, you know, but that was a great, you know, Ben's obviously an awesome competitor. And I learned a lot from competing against someone like that and helped out my wrestling a lot. I got a lot better on bottom after that, because it really hurts to, you know, to lose a match because you can't pick bottom, you know, and he was just that dominant on top. So, you know, that summer I put a lot of work in the bottom and got much better in that position.
A lot of these guys, try to make that transition to international style wrestling. And it's tough because there's not many spots. You made the transition quite well. You made a world team in 2013. Mm-hmm. What's your advice to someone making that transition that might be on the bubble of whether they're going to make it or not?
I think my advice would just be to stick with it. You know, my first real shot at it was 2009, and every year I did I never got lower than third at the opener to trials. I was doing okay. You know, I wasn't getting what I wanted, and then in 2013 I finally made a world team, and unfortunately didn't get a medal. But you know, I think now our freestyle team is doing awesome. You know, and so. It's almost like, I don't know, when I was coming out, you know, 2009, we weren't winning a whole lot, you know, and I've said this before, but, you know, Jordan Burroughs deserves a ton of credit for kind of steering the USA Wrestling ship in the right direction. And, cause he came out and just right away, you know, was winning. And I think when you have other people, you know, on your team that are winning it, everything's contagious, you know? So I think that's what we're seeing now in the international stage. When I was coming through, it was like, the thought was that these Russians had some secret that we didn't know. And, you know, it was like, they were just so good. And then Jordan kind of debunked that whole myth, you know, cause he just did what he did to everybody, whether it was an American, an Iranian or a Russian. I mean, he treated it the same way. So, you know, his mental ability to, extremely mentally tough and able to come do that. And, you know, in 2013, he won a gold medal on a broken ankle. So, you know, he's a heck of a leader for our team. And like I said, deserves a lot of credit for where we're at now.
Although it was a big gap, you were a weight class apart internationally. Did you get in the room and wrestle with Jordan Burroughs quite a bit?
Yeah, we wrestled all the time. You know, obviously, he's really good, but he also had a style that you know, I had a ton of trouble with because he's hard to get your hands on, you know. So I try to wrestle with him a lot. And you know, we're only one weight class apart. And I was pretty small, 84, 86 kilo guy. So I wrestled 174 in college. So it wasn't as much of a gap. So, yeah, we wrestled quite a bit. And obviously, he's a heck of a training partner and just a great guy.
Hey, you had a role in the movie Foxcatcher. I'm disappointed on IMDb. Yeah. They don't even list you on there. Tell us about that experience.
Yeah, I'm disappointed too.
Yeah.
that was, so Jesse Jansen was, you know, national champion for Harvard. Somehow, I don't know how he was involved, but he was involved in the movie in kind of like a wrestling choreographer type of role. And he just called me and said they needed people my size, and you know, they were filming the movie in Pittsburgh, and I was living in Columbus, Ohio at the time because I was training at the Ohio Regional Training Center at Ohio State. But it, you know, it's just a 3-hour drive, and it was around the holidays, like in December, and it was I just came back out to Pittsburgh for 2 days, and yeah, it was really easy. It was like two really long days, but you know, you didn't have to do much. You just went out there and basically fake the wrestling match, you know. And so it was fun. It was a really cool experience to see how, you know, the behind the scenes of how a movie is made. But yeah, it was cool. They used all real wrestlers for those type of scenes. And, you know, so a lot of guys got to do that. And it was pretty fun.
Did you get a feel for Channing Tatum? Did he pick up anything about the sport?
He's really athletic. You know, I'll give him that. I remember, so in our scene, it was when, man, I forget the year, but Mark Schultz beat, I was like, you know, a guy from Bulgaria. Mark Schultz beats that guy in the world finals. I think it was in France. And then right after, he does a backflip. And Channing Tatum did the backflip, you know, no warm-up or anything, just did the backflip. So that was impressive because he's a pretty big guy. I mean, he's bigger than me, you know, maybe 210 pounds, 215. But, yeah, very athletic. So I'm sure he could pick it up, you know, if he was really into it, but I don't know if he was that into it. They did all the wrestling, you know, scenes in a row. And I think those guys were about done with wrestling for a while.
So give us the over under on a minute on how long Channing Tatum would last against you.
it wouldn't last long. You know, it's just, I don't know if they're into the whole physicality of the sport. You know, I think that, I remember doing scenes and then, you know, the actors would get iced down afterwards of like 20 seconds of hand fighting. So, it'd be pretty short.
So take us through that. What is it like to be on set with a movie? I've read stuff about that where it's not what you'd think. It's not glorious. It's pretty, pretty boring at times. What was your 2-day experience like?
Yeah. No, I'd say that's about right. It's really boring. I mean, it was like 12-hour days, you know, and for about, I mean, I was maybe involved for maybe five minutes, you know, and then the scene in the movie is, I mean, you shoot the scene 100 times, and then, you know, when the movie comes out, it's like you're in there for like 1 minute, maybe 30 seconds, but so yeah, it's just kind of a long, tedious, boring day, but. But it was nice because, like I said, they used all real wrestlers, so I had a lot of friends there, and you know, we just kind of hung out and shoot the breeze while they did their thing. And you know, when it was our turn, we did it, and that was that.
What did you think about the movie?
You know, I felt like it was a little slow. And you kind of know, I mean, you know, if you know the story, you know what's going to happen, so that takes a little bit away from it. I think maybe if people who saw it that weren't sure what was, you know, what happened, maybe they enjoyed it a little more, but and some of the factual stuff they changed, which I thought was strange, you know. And then I remember, you know, it just jumped right to, you know, when Dave Schultz was murdered, and you know, that wasn't until 1996, so I don't know, some of that stuff that they changed, I didn't think they needed to, but what do I know? You know, I mean, they did a good job, I guess.
Well, you are now a head wrestling coach in your second season. Did you see yourself in this position a few years ago, heading the team that you once wrestled for?
No. I you know, when I got into coaching, I've always wanted to be back at Pitt, and you know, we talk about it. I would think about it or talk about it often about, you know, wanting to come back to Pitt. I love the city of Pittsburgh. I love the university. You know, and I have a lot of faith in the team and what this program can do. So this was always kind of the end goal, to get back to Pitt in some fashion. I didn't think it would happen this soon, or, you know, that I'd be a head coach this soon, but I'm obviously incredibly grateful for the opportunity.
What's been the learning curve in becoming a head coach? You were at Virginia, then Oklahoma, and now you're here in your second year. What has been the surprising part of your job that you said, wow, I didn't think I'd have to do this?
There's not a whole lot that I do that I didn't do before. Just, you're just more like on the hook for things, you know, like, 'cause in wrestling, I mean, you know, like a football coaching staff has so many people on it. So different people do different roles, where in wrestling, kind of everybody, you know, if you're an assistant, you have your hand in everything a little bit, you know, even if you have, you know, if your main role is recruiting or something, you still have your hand a little bit in helping organize the fundraising events and stuff like that. So there's not a whole lot that I'm doing that I've didn't experience before, but you know, you get, if you do well, you get a lot of praise, and if you don't do well, you know, the criticism falls on you as the head coach. So that's, I guess that's the difference. But you know, and a lot of times the praise and criticism is warranted, you know, because there's a lot more people. It's not all the head coach. I mean, it's, you know, the kids are doing a great job and our staff does a great job. So so that's a little different, I guess. But really, I mean, you just got to learn that you can't make everybody happy, you know, with alumni and donors and then, you know, all the student athletes and the student athletes' parents and things like that. And you get a lot of people trying to tell you the way to do it, you know, and you kind of have to have, you know, you got to have like some type of selective ignorance a little bit, you know, and kind of hone in on what you need to focus on and block out the rest of the distraction or the noise and just accept the fact that, you know, you're not going to make everybody happy. So, you know, I think that's probably the difference between being an assistant and a head coach, is you just gotta think about that stuff a little more.
Keith, you guys are 8-2. You've beaten a lot of teams that beat you a year ago. You've got a good young nucleus and added to your RTC. What are you most proud of what you've accomplished to this point?
I don't know. That's a good question. I think that, you know, what we're most proud, I mean, it's early, you know, it's early on. We're not even through our second year yet, but what I'm proud of is the progress that we've made, I think, you know, with our team and the way that they're treating, they're more serious about wrestling than they were when I got here. And so that I think is a testament to my staff and the time that they put in with these guys and, you know, the relationships that they built with each member on the team. And we're pretty close in the team and the guys are, you know, all pulling for each other and, you know, the culture is one where they're pretty serious about trying to get better at wrestling, you know, and that's what we're here to do. So, it's been fun, you know, and I think that's probably what we're most proud of is just the progress from one year to the next.
You mentioned your staff there. You got three guys on your staff, Jordan Lean, Drew Headley, Connor Yautzi, three different alma maters. Mm-hmm. How did this group come together? How did you put this staff together?
Yeah, well, Drew and I were friends in high school, and then we were both in the same class here at Pitt. So we were teammates at Pitt. We knew each other from high school. So he's somebody I've known for a very long time, and he's somebody I trust. You know, he's just an awesome guy and very loyal. And, you know, I know he'll get my back no matter what we're doing here. But but he was a no-brainer. You know, the guys love him, the alumni and the fans love him here. So he was a no-brainer to kind of keep on. And he's had success here at Pitt too. So who knows what can be done. And then Jordan and I coached together at Virginia for a couple of years. So we worked pretty well together down there. And Jordan and I are much different personalities, but we seem to, for whatever reason, it seems to work well. So, you know, he's an intelligent guy and I want to bring him on staff and have his abilities as well. I mean, Connor was the only one that I really didn't know. You know, I'm friends with some of the guys on Michigan staff and Josh Torello just happened to mention to me that, you know, I should look at Connor for the volunteer job here. And he thinks that he would do a good job. And we brought Connor into Pittsburgh and we just kind of hit it off right away. And he's just been awesome. I mean, the guy's a workhorse and has been a huge, huge addition to our staff.
Hey, you have a stud at 133 pounds, but there's a lot of studs right now at 133 pounds. Are you excited to be watching the round of 16 like we are? Because that's going to be a fun tournament for those 133 pounders at Nationals this year.
Yeah. Yeah. That weight is really deep. And to think about it, you know, with Seth Gross being out and it's still probably the deepest weight class in the country. It's pretty crazy, but there's a lot of really good wrestlers there and a lot of good young wrestlers there. So that's going to be a weight class that's going to be exciting for a number of years. But yeah, we got a great one in Mickey Phillippe. And I've known Mickey for a long time. He's from the Pittsburgh area and he's just a really tough kid that he's going to give his best effort every time out. And he's getting a lot better. You know, his skills have come a long way and he's becoming a more complete wrestler. And so it's exciting to see his development and we're all looking forward to see what he can do at the end of the year here.
What do your alumni want from the program? Do they have expectations that they articulate to you?
Yeah, I think, I mean, you know, everybody, we're in the ACC and it's a good conference. And I think that it hasn't always been a good conference. So sometimes, you know, people think that we should just be winning the ACC because they're used to what it used to be, you know, but now, I mean, NC State and Virginia Tech are top 10 teams. And so you hear that a lot of, you know, you want to be ACC champs, you want to be a top 10 team. And I have to explain to a lot of people that if we win the ACCs, we're going to be a top 10 team, you know, probably higher. NC State was fourth last year, you know, so I think some of our alumni, you know, are kind of, some of our alumni understand that, some are getting caught up to speed that because of not that long ago, you know, the ACC was not a great conference, but now it's really taking shape and it's a testament to what the all the coaches in the conference have been able to do. And it's exciting to be in that conference. But yeah, you know, you hear top 10 a lot, you hear, you know, ACC, winning the ACCs a lot. And really we're just, you know, as a staff and as a team, we're just trying to get better each day. And you know, see what we can do here. I think that the sky's the limit if we get the pieces in place, and it's going to take time though. You know, nothing happens overnight, but yeah, I think we keep working towards it. We can do some special things here.
Is the individual system to qualify for the national tournament fair? Of course, the Big Ten is the power conference. Do you feel like the ACC has a fair shake to be able to be in that top tier of the NCAA championships?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's more fair than it's ever been. You know, when I wrestled, we didn't have the system, and it was, I don't know. I remember they changed it. I forget what year it was, but I think it was a couple of guys in the Big Ten, you know, had great years and then didn't qualify. You know, I think it was Franklin Gomez maybe. And, you know, who was really good, you know, all American type wrestler and didn't qualify. And, you know, we were in the EWL at the time, and then you get third in EWL, you can go. And it just didn't seem fair. But, so they fixed that. And I think it's more fair than it's ever been right now. And I think that, you know, I think last year ACC had the most qualifiers it's ever had. So yeah, I think that, I like the system, and I think that, you know, it's pretty fair.
Andy and I have a theory we want to run by you. We don't like dual meet scoring the way it stands today. We want to see it changed. We want to go to a cumulative scoring system where if you score 7 points in a match, you get 7 points. If your opponent scores 3, he scores 3. Falls are worth 22, you can have a technical fall worth up to 21. What would you think about a system like that where we have cumulative scoring to make it more entertaining for the fans?
Yeah, I think it's an interesting idea. Who's going to do all that math, though?
MIT?
You know? Yeah.
It's not that hard, though. I mean, the same thing with basketball, though, Keith. You tabulate 2 points. When there's a 2-point takedown, you put up 2 on the board. I don't know that it's that complicated.
No. I was just kidding. But maybe it's not that complicated. But basketball, I don't know if that's the best. I mean, basketball games are like, they're pointless to watch until the last couple minutes, because that's when it gets interesting. But no, I guess, I mean, yeah, no, I get what you're saying. And I think it'd be cool to do that. Yeah. Didn't they try that at, when did the NCAA, Fan Fest, the 1 year they had a Big Ten versus Big 12, didn't they do cumulative scoring at that? It was like a freestyle event,
man. Maybe it was freestyle. I remember them doing something like that, and it's possible.
I remember it was, but they had no tech fall, and so it got like out of hand because Nick Simmons scored like 30 points. In
that. Now you say that, I do remember that.
Is that over in Omaha?
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, I think so. And so it was like for the first match, Nick Simmons scored so many points it was out of reach. So it kind of backfired, but you got to have a tech fall in there.
Yeah.
But no, I'm cool with that idea. I would try it. I don't see anything, you know, off the top of my head wrong with it. It's, but there's nothing, you know, in the dual meets that we have now, I think dual meets are exciting now. So I don't ever, you know, feel like we have, an issue with the way we score. But if you change it to your idea, I'd be fine with that too.
Yeah. I guess the logic with that is just the incentive to score. So if you're up 11-0 for both guys, there is no incentive to score. Cause if you get a takedown, it's going to be 13-0. If the other guy gets a takedown, it's 9-0. We're just looking at more ways to incentivize the sport. And I think it's pretty easy for a casual fan to understand that kind of logic and that type of scoring. So we're just looking at a way to simplify it.
So you're saying if a guy's winning 11-0, you're going to give the guy with 0 points more incentive to score with your system.
And the guy winning.
Yeah, no, I see that.
Yeah, because we think that you win 7-0, you ought to be rewarded more than if you win 3-2 based 3-0. Off 1 second of writing time and, you know, the second tiebreaker. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, I think, it makes sense. I think we have a lot of issues in our sport that probably – might need to get taken care of first.
What do you think is the biggest one?
What's that?
What do you think is the biggest one that needs to get taken care of first?
Oh, man. This hands-to-the-face stuff is out of control this year. You know, I mean, that's one that's been everybody's been talking about that I think is getting out of hand. That's just off the top of my head. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, that's things like that, you know, stalling too is that's bad. You know, that needs to be fixed. I don't know. I think that, you know, a lot of people, they want stalling called more, but I think, you know, talking about incentivizing people to score, you're seeing wrestlers just wrestle to get a stall call. Coaches are just coaching to get a stall call, you know, instead of teaching, like instead of encouraging guys to get points. It's like, I don't know. I would like to see more, like less gaming the system and more wrestling, you know? Now, like for instance, this year we have the, you know, if you're on bottom and you get to your feet, it's the top guy's obligation to mat return. So what you see a lot is the bottom guy will get to his feet and not try to get out because he's trying to get a stall call, you know? And it's like, again, that's an example of gaming the system instead of just pure wrestling. It's kind of annoying, but stalling in general is I think is a little bit of a mess. And obviously this hands to the face rule is kind of ridiculous too.
So what's the fix to the stalling thing? Is it adding a pure step out? Does that solve some of it? So stalling should be called.
I do like the step out rule a lot. You know, I think freestyle has it pretty close to right. The way that the rules are, I like the freestyle rules a lot. I'm not a big fan of because the thing is, people complain that, you know, the guy's stalling or he's not doing anything. It's like, well, you have to, your offense needs to be better. You know, it's like, but we're not encouraging that at all. All we're encouraging is like, make it look like you're trying to score to get the other guy hit for stalling. And then we're going to complain that the guy's stalling. And I don't know. I mean, I would like to see it just more into, let's just try to get better at wrestling. You know, let's score more takedowns. And, you know, it's not our fault if the guy's not good enough to score, you know? So I don't know, you know, that's my thing with freestyle though, too, is the 30 second shot clock, you know, where they'll put somebody on the clock. And a lot of times it looks like they're just guessing, you know, to put somebody on. It's like, it's an evenly matched bout and you have to put somebody on the clock and they're just guessing. And, you know, it doesn't come into play a whole lot where somebody wins 1-1 on a shot clock thing, but it's annoying when that happens. Yeah. You know, I think that you more wrestling and less gaming the system.
What are your thoughts on soda?
On soda?
Yeah, pop. This is our standard question, so I just wanted to just go right into that.
Seemed really, really random, didn't it?
yeah. What do you mean? Like, what am I thought?
Yeah, I mean,
soda?
Do you like pop? Do you drink pop? If so, what's your favorite one? We get a lot of guys that say they just are anti-soda and refuse to.
Yeah, I've never had soda in my life.
Never? What? Not once?
No, I've tasted it one time when I was a kid, and I just don't like it. I don't drink anything that's carbonated. I don't know why. It's not for me.
When did that start? You just made a conscious
decision?
When
I was a kid. Yeah, when I was a kid, I just didn't like it and didn't like the, you know, and then I just stuck with it.
So what do you do? Like, what do you drink with a meal? You just have water? Is there?
Yeah. Yeah. I drink water. I drink water or coffee usually.
Water and coffee. That's your go-to, huh?
Okay.
That's mm-hmm.
good. Hey, how about before we close out this segment, how about we play a game? We're going to test your knowledge of Pittsburgh athletics. Are you ready for 5 questions about your hometown?
Oh, man. Okay. I don't know. Is it Pittsburgh athletics or Pittsburgh wrestling?
Well, there might be a Pittsburgh wrestling in there. We'll see.
Okay. That's pretty much all I know. But.
Okay. Well, We'll test you out here. So question number one is, what two players from the Pittsburgh Steelers were involved in the Immaculate Reception?
Ooh, is Franco Harris one?
He is one.
I don't know the other one.
He's a commentator. Harrison. He's bald.
Oh, Terry Bradshaw?
Yep. You got it.
There you go.
You got it.
You go.
All right.
I know Franco Harris because they have the statue of him catching the ball in the airport.
Oh yeah. Well, mm-hmm. They tipped you off. They helped you on that question. Number two, who is the only person to ever win a Stanley Cup as a player and as an owner, both with the Pittsburgh Penguins?
Oh, Mario Lemieux.
Yep. So you're doing, you're killing it. You're doing a great job here.
That was a toss up. That was an easy one.
Okay. Question number three. What Pittsburgh Pirate died in a plane wreck just after getting 3,000 hits?
Roberto Clemente.
What? I mean, you act like you don't know this stuff, Keith.
Well, these are like, you're asking me like the most famous Pittsburgh athlete ever.
Well, I know. So we're, but either way, you're getting this. You acted like you only know Pittsburgh wrestling. Okay. Question number four. Who is the greatest, won't say greatest, the most prolific wrestler to come out of Pittsburgh who happened to win an NCAA championship, world title, and an Olympic gold medal?
Kurt Angle.
You got it. And the fifth one is, this is your call. Who's the greatest wrestler in Pittsburgh wrestling history?
I'd say, you mean for the University of Pittsburgh?
University
who's the best
of Pittsburgh.
Wrestler?
You got it.
Probably Ed Perry.
Okay.
And I think he's a 3-time champ.
Yeah, and his brother was too.
Ed Perry or Pat Santoro. Yeah. Pat was a 2-time champ, 4-time All-American.
You try to get Pat involved in the program?
Yeah, well, he coaches at Lehigh.
Well, so I know, but you can still try. I mean,
you know, conflict of interest.
Yeah, but still, you can try because you just got to say, hey, you wrestle here, buddy. This is your program.
No, I know. I talked to Pat a lot, and he's someone that I look up to in this profession, and he's awesome. So yeah, we talk quite a bit, and obviously he's handling his team and I'm trying to do my best of mine, but he's a man.
Hey, thanks for this interview. We will see you in Pittsburgh. We appreciate the time, and Pittsburgh will be the host. It should be a fun year.
All right. Sounds good. Thanks.
All right. That was Keith Gavin, head wrestling coach at Pittsburgh University. Andrew, there was some good information we gleaned out of that. I like Keith Gavin. First time we've had a chance to interview him and talk to him about his college career, international career, coaching career, but it seems very pragmatic and practical in his approach.
There's a lot of interesting stuff in there.
What'd you like best?
It always fascinates me when guys don't get to the top level in high school and then they go on and win an NCAA title. Just how they did it. But, you know, you listen to Keith talk about how close he was and he, you know, going from third in PA and then going on and finishing second in Fargo. It's like, you know, he's having success on the national level. It wasn't like he just kind of stumbled into a third place finish in high school in PA and then, you know, out of the blue, something clicks at Pittsburgh and he wins an NCAA title. So it was there and learned a lot more about his story. I didn't realize, what he went through early in his career.
And I was, I'm still kind of shaking my head that he never had a soda.
Yeah, man, me too. Me too.
I
haven't had one this week yet.
Well, I just would think as a natural progression as a kid, you would be pounding the sodas and enjoying that. I wish I could say that. That's a great stat to be able to have is say, I tried it once and I didn't like it. And here I am just a straight up water guy. Good for him.
I like Dr. Pepper too much to think about my life without Dr. Pepper or Mountain Dew.
Yeah. You like both those, don't you? They're good. There's a reason they sell and that people enjoy them. This has been fun too.
What are you, Kyle? What's your soda of choice? You're not a big soda guy.
I don't drink soda, but if I do, it'd be a Mountain Dew.
Yeah. That's Gable's choice too, right?
I like Mountain Dew and Dr. Pepper, same ones as you do. I just don't drink them. But maybe on occasion I'll have a soda and just kick back, but it might be more like once a year rather than once a week. So been a lot of fun here. We appreciated having Keith Gavin on the program. We will see him out in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania for the NCAA championships. For Andrew Hamilton of Track Wrestling, I'm Kyle Klingman. You've been listening to On the Mat.
Is part of the Matt Talk Podcast Network. For more wrestling podcasts, head over to matttalkonline.com.